My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. And welcome into episode 3 of Best Dans in Baseball. Daniel Shoptaw with Dan Buffa, recording this on Friday morning, the 26th of June, instead of our normal Thursday night. Life gets in the way at times. But that means we can come in here and we can tell you that the Cardinals are continuing to be an incredible team, a team that is now 8 games up on their closest opposition. And the closest opposition has, well, almost second or third best record in the National League. That just tells you how good the Cardinals have been. Since we last spoke, the Cardinals have played the Phillies, 1-2 out of 3. Went then, had a day off, went down to Miami, won all 3 of those games, so they were 5-1 since we talked last. Well, Dan, last time you made the case, especially, that the Cardinals needed to call up Xavier Scruggs, do something about the bench. The next day, because obviously John Mozeliak is a big fan of ours, he not only did they call up Xavier Scruggs, they called up Greg Garcia. And both people seem to have made a pretty good impact in these 6 games.
Yeah, I just think that for the most part, it just really helps the bench. I mean, the bench was a very big, kind of a weak aspect of the Cardinals team that was, for the most part, chugging right along, scoring enough runs, pitching very well. I just think when you have a guy like Garcia who's got a little bit better of a bat than Pete Cosma, he can come off the bench late. Xavier Scruggs made a nice start in Miami and had a big 2-run double. I think it was on Wednesday in game 2. He had a big kind of game, kind of breaking up a tie game. But, you know, it just adds more bats to your bench. I mean, these guys are, they don't really figure into the long-term plans of the Cardinals. So all it does is free up room for guys to play more down in Memphis, and it helps up the Cardinals and it makes their bench better. I mean, I just think nobody wants to see, as good as he can be, Mark Reynolds doesn't need to start the last like 70 games of the season. So it's just nice to have a guy like Scruggs who can get in there and get some at-bats, because according to stats that were first revealed by Bernie Nicklaus, he really tears up left-handed pitching, especially when it comes to slugging. So, I mean, if you can just get him some starts against lefties, you know, give other teams a different look as far as not having Reynolds in there, even though Mark Reynolds has done, for the most part, what we expected of him, he's done a decent job. It's just given the Cardinal team, given us a little bit more depth as far as your bench and your options in the middle infield at first base.
Yeah, I mean, and that's definitely a good thing. I mean, the bench has been probably the only real weak spot on this team, and even that is kind of, you know, you could deal with. I mean, they've come through at good times. I mean, we saw Tony Cruz get a few hits here and there. We've seen, you know, you've got that rotation of Jay and Borges that, you know, neither one is necessarily, you know, a dominant factor, but they can give you a hit here and there and off the bench. You're not looking for power, but that's what Scruggs gives you. But in theory, at least, we haven't necessarily seen him just, you know, do that yet. But that does improve the bench, and that just makes, you know, the best team in baseball better. You know, both Scruggs and Garcia have had, you know, a good week. I don't think either one of them been called up before this week. Scruggs is hitting .417, Garcia's hitting .500. And yeah, they're not long-term core pieces. We're not talking about, you know, a Stephen Piscotty or something that might be a part of the real future. But, you know, Greg Garcia could easily be next year's Pete Cosma. Hopefully better than next year's Pete Cosma, because this year's Pete Cosma is, and we'll talk about that. But, you know, he's got a real good chance to be that utility guy that can play second, that can play short. I mean, we've seen Daniel Descalzo be that guy. We've seen, you know, others in that line. And it's not flashy and it's not exciting, but having a quality guy back there to be able to spell Colton Wong, to be able to spell Johnny Peralta or whoever are the starters is a key to a good team, because you've just got to be able to not, you know, have a black hole out there. And so seeing what Garcia can do, right now and so far so good, is a big thing. Yeah, Scruggs, yeah, he's not really going to be a long-term guy, but again, a bench bat is never a bad thing. And so it's nice to see them finally go to that. You know, it was nice to see them finally get back to the 13 hitters as well.
Yeah.
This team, you know, I remember, and I hate to date myself, but you probably do too. I remember when it was pretty standard, 14 hitters, 11 pitchers. I mean, that's the way everybody did it.
Yeah.
Now it seems to have gotten down to 13 and 12. And for the longest time, the Cardinals were running 12 and 13. And that's just ridiculous on a team that has a starting rotation that can go seven innings just about every night.
Yeah, especially right now. I mean, you're essentially, you know, you're carrying four extra players in your bench. So if you have an extra inning game, you're in trouble. You know, I mean, you're like, okay, everybody, here comes Pete Cosmo with the bases loaded. Or here comes Tony Cruz. Or last year it was like Shane Robinson. You know, with Scruggs, I mean, just looking at their stats, Garcia and Scruggs, they have a combined 9 hits and 20 at-bats on a year. I mean, and that's just a couple guys who come up in the last week and just really hit well. And, you know, and these guys aren't going to hit a bunch of home runs. I mean, you're not going to see Scruggs put on a display like Bryce Harper or, you know, try to impersonate, you know, the Albert Pujols of old. These guys are just going to come up here and be, you know, guys you can rely on if you do need a big bat later in the game, or if you do need a guy, like, if you want to save Pete Cosmo for a defensive replacement, you can put Garcia out there or vice versa. You just have more options. I mean, for the longest of time, the Cardinals were carrying 3 catchers for no reason. I mean, so when they made this move, I thought, okay, somebody finally has turned on a light bulb, because, you know, you not only brought up one guy, you brought up, you know, a guy who could play first base. You brought up Garcia, a guy who can play second. He could play short. He could pretty much, you know, play all over the infield. So I think the Cardinals give yourselves a better chance. And for a team that plays a lot of one-run games, a lot of close games, those pinch hitters late in the game could be very meaningful.
The Cardinals in June have a 2.52 ERA as a team.
Oh, wow.
And that is an impressive stat. It leads the majors. I mean, Pittsburgh second with 2.65. I mean, they're, you know, pretty significant difference. But you factor in that counts the 10-run game in Colorado and the 9-run game against Philadelphia. I mean, you take that, especially that 9-run game in Philadelphia, which is, I mean, Colorado you expect. Philadelphia is a little surprising. But you take some of that down. I mean, this team as a whole could be having a 2.3, 2.2 ERA for almost a whole month.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, the bullpen has been outstanding. You know, bullpen's given up like 2 or 3 runs. Last night, you know, Carlos Villanueva gave up a home run, but, you know, it hit the foul pole. It wasn't just, you know, one of those fluke things. If it goes
yeah.
to another foot, it's a foul ball. He gets out of it. They're giving up less than a run, I think, over the month. The starters are been outstanding. I think the only time we hit a bump is John Lackey. I mean, he had both of those games that we talked about.
Yeah.
Walker had a little bit of a stumble, but, you know, this has been a team that, you know, even when they're not hitting, and thankfully this week, as we talked about, they started to, you know, they're only giving up 1 or 2 runs, and that's a difficult team to beat.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Cardinals can play down to competition at times, but they also are taking care of the really good teams. I mean, looking at the month, I mean, that series against the Dodgers, you take those 2 games against the Royals, you split with the Twins, and then you take care, you actually don't play down your competition. They kind of done that throughout the season, especially with the Rockies earlier in the month. You know, you take care of the Phillies. I mean, you lose a game on Sunday, but, you know, you're going to lose one of these games to either the Phillies or the Marlins. And luckily, you know, you lost the game on Sunday, and then you swept, you know, the Marlins, who, you know, who aren't a great team, but, you know, they're also not an easy team that you can just brush a pat. You know, they you can just, you know, move along, and you have to hit well, and you have to overcome 2 gigantic Giancarlo Stanton home runs that were just, you know, basically the highlights for the Miami Marlins in that series. It's just really good to see guys like, especially while we're on the pitching, like Jaime Garcia and Carlos Martinez once again pitch, you know, not just quality starts, but, you know, more than quality. You know, I mean, I keep waiting for one of these guys to hit a stumbling block, and right now it's Waka and it's Lackey on the road. Luckily, John Lackey's facing the Cubs tonight in a place where he loves to pitch, which is Busch Stadium. You know, and the Cardinals play a lot of Busch Stadium games in next month. But it's just really nice to see the pitching hold up and the hitting do just enough. I mean, it'd be nice to see him hit against the Chicago teams that this next week to score some runs, but the pitching is endured and they've taken some hits. They just got Lance Lynn back last night and they're getting probably the best Jaime Garcia that we've seen. I mean, since 2011, I think he's pitching better than I can ever imagine him pitching. Is that right? Or, I mean, when it comes to Jaime, I haven't seen him pitch this efficiently as far as a pitch count that's in the low 90s after seven innings. I haven't seen this from Jaime. Have you?
No, I mean, this is outstanding. I mean, just pulling up his Baseball Reference, and if you look at ERA Plus, which compares him to the rest of the league, I mean, right now he's at 229, you know, where base is 100, which is significant. I mean, 143. His rookie season was pretty good. I mean, 13-8, 2.7 ERA, 132 strikeouts in 163 innings. But this is better because even back then, I mean, the idea was on Jaime was that he could pitch at home and he couldn't pitch on the road. I mean, that was Jaime's trick, if you will. He was dominant in Busch Stadium, and then, you know, whatever reason, his mint didn't get on his pillow or whatever, the hotel just wasn't good. You know, it just seemed like he would struggle on the road. And then, I think like last year, he flipped that and struggled at home and was great at road. Now we're seeing him just be good everywhere. And he is pitching, you know, I mentioned someplace along the way, you know, the beginning of this year, everybody said, well, this is the last year for Jaime Garcia because there's absolutely no way the Cardinals pick up $8-9 million option for next year. And now we're getting to the point that you start wondering, well, what do you do? Do you keep that option? Oh, it's 11.5 for next year, 12 million for the year after. It's like, man, well, do you pick that up? We've got pitchers. I mean, it's a debate now.
I mean,
at this rate, if he keeps this up by the end of the season, it's not even going to be a debate.
No, I mean, especially, I mean, if they're one-year deals, I mean, it's not like that you have to sign the guy to another 4 or 5 year deal. You have these options. You go, here, let's say he finishes this season. He's really good. He wins at least 15 games. He has a good ERA. He stays healthy. Okay, well, I mean, you know, we'll pay you 11.5, and you know, we'll go that. And if you pitch then really good, maybe they'll give him a couple more years instead of just doing the 2017 option. But yeah, I mean, you have options on this guy, and $11.5 million for a guy who's looking like he's going to have a really good season, just very efficient. I mean, that's in this day and age for a starting pitcher, that's kind of a bargain. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, when his contract started out, it was $3.2 million. And it just constantly rose from to 5 to 7 to 9.2 this year. If he pitches the way he's pitching now, if he can just stay healthy, we all know the guy's talented and we all know that he's actually matured. I mean, that's one thing I haven't hung around Jaime since 2009 when he really first arrived. But when I talked to him in Memphis, he seemed like a guy that was just driven, a guy that was really just tired of his body holding him back. He knows how talented he is. He's matured around guys like Adam Wainwright and Matt Holliday and Carpenter, guys that have just told him how to be a pitcher, how to hold your emotions in check. I think these guys have both gone to work on Jaime Garcia and Lance Lynn and Carlos Martinez as far as just telling them, you know, it's more than just your arm, it's your head. And we all know, like you noted, you know, if Jaime just got a bad call from the umpire, if he didn't get a play behind him made, you could see him just unravel. He does the thing where he raises his arms up and he almost like tightens his jersey up. I don't know. He does it these days, but he did it like 9 times before he threw a pitch. He would just, he almost like, you know, we raise your arms and make your sleeves tighter. It's like, oh man, he's just winding up. And that would happen in like the third inning. But now you're seeing a guy who just, you know, if he doesn't get a call, he just makes a better pitch and he's just got, you know, devastating breaking pitches right now. I mean, his fastball has always been crisp, but it's just the way that he can make hitters look foolish. I mean, he gave the home run to Stanton, but then he made Giancarlo Stanton look pretty bad the next time when he struck him out. Yeah. It's a guy who is just, I haven't seen this guy. I mean, like when I watched him pitch in his first rehab start, he was all over the place. And here we are almost a month later and he's a complete pitcher. He's a guy who's pitching not like a guy that, oh, we hope you pitch like a 4 or 5. Jaime Garcia's pitching like an ace right now.
Yeah. Looking at the salary rankings, $11.5 million would put him 95th, 96th in the league for salary. I mean, your pitchers around that range are Francisco Liriano, Doug Fister, Gio Gonzalez. Kyle Osher's getting $11 million. I mean, that's reasonable. If they did pick up that salary, it's not unreasonable given what he's doing this year. Now, this year is obviously not going to be what he's, you know, it's going to be a bit difficult for him to continue this. Because, I mean, he's pitching, you know, an ERA under 2. You know, he's going to have some bad outings, and he's only thrown 48 innings, which, granted, is more than he threw all of last year. Yeah. But, you know, he's still got a long way to go, and he's got to stay healthy, which is always an issue, though, you have to worry about. But for right now, I mean, Garcia's been, he's been amazing, and it's been a huge thing, because with Wainwright going down, and with some of those others not necessarily being ready to step in, with Gonzalez not being ready like we thought, oh, if something happens to a starter, Marco Gonzalez slides in. Well, Marco Gonzalez has his own issues. So to have him come in, I mean, he's really helped save the season. And it's hard to say he's saved the season when the Cardinals are winning 2/3 of their games and they're up by 8 on the Pirates, because he hasn't done all that. And it's not like even without Jaime Garcia, they might not be, you know, pretty strong. But to have that and to just kind of put that team into the next level has been huge. Now, like you said, we got Lance Lynn back yesterday. Lynn was one of those guys, like you were talking about, that always had that, you know, something goes wrong and everything's going to pot type of attitude. And we haven't seen that since, it's been about a year since we've seen, you know, the Lynning type thing.
That's
been huge.
It's just, and really, I mean, looking at Garcia's pitch counts. I mean, he hasn't thrown 100 pitches since his first start against the Mets on May 21st. I mean, he threw 8 innings against the Royals and threw 96 pitches. I mean, against the Miami Marlins, he threw 90 pitches for 7 innings. It's just, when you see guys like that, it's nice. I mean, your defense has to like that. Your whole team has to be clicking better when you're making your pitches. You're being efficient. I mean, we've all had pitchers on the Cardinals who just work and work, and they throw so many pitches. The first pitcher comes to mind is Todd Willemeyer, a guy who just, I think, made me chew off all my nails inside 2 innings of work. He would be efficient, but he would need a lot of pitches. Garcia is doing this with not a lot of pitches. His whip is .88. I mean, he's got 32 strikes. I think that's 7 walks. It's one of those things where, you know, he's allowed only 3 home runs. I mean, he hasn't walked more than 2 guys, I mean, since his first start. I mean, it just, he's gotten better and better with each start. And he really hasn't had a rough start. I mean, even against the Mets where he walked 5 guys, he only allowed 2 earned runs in 7 innings. I mean, he's been a guy you can really rely on. And that's, like you said, on the road or at home. And you just hope he can continue. You know, he can't be this efficient, but as long as he can stay healthy and just be that reliable guy in the wake of Wainwright's absence, it's a huge boost for this club down the road.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned, he's not walking people. Nobody is. I just happened to pull this up. You know, the Cardinals have walked 190 batters all year long. That puts them tied for 25th with the Dodgers, and they've had a few less innings than LA. So, I mean, that is huge. You'd kind of think that's a correlation to a good team, but then the teams below them are Washington, Minnesota, the Mets, and the Cubs, which are teams that are in contention for the most part, so it probably does have some tie. If you're not walking people, you're going to be pretty good. And you're right, that keeps the defense in engaged, and they're not falling asleep out there, which is a big deal. I think that was, you know, as much as I am a big Tyler Lyons fan, as we all know, I mean, that was his first time around, really one of Lyons' problems, is he would run those 3-2 counts like to everybody. He didn't seem to be so much these last 2 starts that he did. He seemed to be a little bit more focused on getting people out or going after people. But, you know, that is big. When you're not having to run it out and, you know, you can get people to hit the ball, you can go deeper into games like we saw. Garcia could have gone into the 8th inning in his game against Miami had he not, you know, kind of twinged himself running the bases. And that would have been a pretty nice milestone for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a thing where you can rely. I mean, he's got a strikeout pitch. I mean, a lot of guys who go 3-2, they, you know, like Joe Kelly is a guy who always had good stuff. He just never had that put away pitch, and he would have a lot of 3-2 counts, and hitters would just foul off and foul off. And sometimes you see that with other pitchers, but with Garcia, he just got that devastating breaking stuff that the hitters are just waving at. I mean, I was watching just replays of his last start, the start in Miami, where he's just getting these Marlins hitters just to wave at the pitch. And man, and these are major league hitters who can hit. I mean, in major league hitters that don't miss a lot of mistakes, and Jaime is just making these guys look foolish right now. I mean, watching these swings, you think, are these guys wearing, like, you know, minor league jerseys, or are these guys wearing major league baseball jerseys? Because the swings that Jaime Garcia is getting from these guys are just, they're almost like, okay, here, let me see if I can just get a piece of this pitch. And I mean, we haven't seen this Jaime Garcia in a while. I mean, we haven't seen him in the last couple of years. He hasn't made more than 15 starts. And maybe, is it 16 he's made in 2012, 2013 combined?
In 2012 he made 20. In 2013 and 14, yeah, he combines at 16.
Oh yeah, yeah. The last 2 years, The last 2 years, I mean, he's made 16 starts. This is a guy that every fan just kind of, when you uttered his name the last 2 years, it was like, oh, Jaime. Because you knew the Cardinals had him, and you knew the potential he had. And I think, I've always just thought about if you're John Mozeliak, I mean, you're a guy that everybody wants you to make a trade for Cole Hamels. You're like, well, let's see what Jaime Garcia can do. And the way he's pitching and the way this rotation is going, I mean, you may not need to make a big trade. I said this yesterday. I was talking to Brandon Kelly on a Mizzou ESPN affiliate station. He's like, you know, what do the Cardinals have to do? Well, with the way their pitching is going, they don't really need a top end starter. Maybe they don't need to go after a Scott Kazmir or a Cole Hamels. They might need an innings guy, maybe still with the innings block on the young kids. But as far as a big need, I'm kind of starting to move over to your side of the fence and say that we're just going to have to go out and get a bat.
Yeah, I mean, need sounds like, hey, they have to do this. You know, if this team did not make a move and stayed healthy, they would be a World Series favorite anyway.
Definitely.
You know, again, that's if they can stay healthy and the way things are going. But so they don't. I don't think they have to have a move. I think that would help them, and I think they should. But we'll see what Mo thinks. Interesting little thing before we leave Garcia. I've got his stats here. Both in 2014, he faced 177 batters. In 2015, so far, he has faced 177 batters, exactly the same amount. So it's interesting to know that he's pitched 4 1/3 more innings, so he's gotten more outs. He's actually struck out less than he did last year, but given up less home runs, walked the same amount of guys. I mean, he's just been better about letting the ball get put into play and people behind him making the plays. And so it's interesting because really there's not just a ton of differences between his numbers for the last 2 years except that earned run category. We'll see if he regresses. I mean, obviously he's going to get probably closer to the 253 mark by the end of the year, you'd expect.
Yeah.
But then again, this is a different offensive environment overall. You talked about Joe Kelly. Let's segue a little bit because I think this is a little off track of a thing. We ought to talk about it. Joe Kelly sent down to Pawtucket yesterday or day before, joining Alan Craig down there. Of course, John Lackey is pitching for the Cardinals tonight. We know how Lackey has done. It's a trade that nobody is ever going to put in the Red Sox favor, I don't believe. Even though a lot of people did at the time, which was surprising.
Oh yeah.
And there's been a lot of people retweeting stuff from last year showing how some people were a little bit wrong on their predictions.
Yes, yes.
But it's got to be pretty shocking to see both of those guys struggle as much as they have outside of St. Louis.
Well, I mean, when the trade was made, I liked getting John Lackey. I think he was what we needed. But I also think, as Bernie Miklos wrote right after the trade, he wrote a great column, and which is really often with me and Bernie, I read his stuff a lot. But what he wrote right after is, this was John Mozeliak sounding an alarm to a team that was kind of sleeping last July. And, you know, to a clubhouse that kind of needed a boost. And, you know, when he traded a couple fan favorites that were not as valuable, I mean, he didn't see him as valuable as others did. I mean, it really woke the team up. And a year later, just about, it's paid off. I mean, John Lackey is 9-7 with an ERA around, I think, 3.8. But for the most part, I mean, he's been a huge plus for a team that's missing their ace this year. And Alan Craig, I think just the biggest part of that trade was giving Boston Red Sox that, like, an anchor of a contract that just immediately sunk to the bottom of the, you know, the bottom of the sea. I mean, it just, I mean, and something that the Red Sox aren't going to be able to pull out. And then you have Joe Kelly, who, yes, he had a bunch of potential, but, man, in that ballpark, you know, in that division in the American League, I mean, his stuff, a pitcher that doesn't have a put-away pitch, a strikeout pitch, is just going to be eaten alive. And I think, and people think that he's going to just going to climb out of it. I can't see it unless he comes back to the National League in a pitcher-friendly park. It was a trade that Mazenuk really just, it was a quiet, like, slam dunk, if there's a way to put it. For the Cardinals to cut that contract of Alan Craig with the way that he's just descended in his career, and it's very unfortunate to see because we all know how great Alan Craig was. But to get rid of that contract and to trade basically a swap straight up for John Lackey, you know, to get him for Joe Kelly, and also to get John Lackey for $500,000 this year. See a guy in John Lackey who I think he has 6 wins right now. Is that right? I think he's 6-4 with a decent ERA. I mean, here's a guy that maybe is on pace to win around 14 to 15 games. You get him for $500,000, and you trade off a contract on Craig that was just going to weigh the Cardinals down for years to come. So I call it a great trade at the time, and a year later, I didn't expect to see Alan Craig and Joe Kelly both in Pawtucket. I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought they'd be playing decent roles on the Red Sox. I thought even Alan Craig might find his swing, but I just think that whatever foot injury he had is just never recovered, or it could be his mental, his state. I'm not sure if he'll – I think he's going to come back to the major leagues eventually. It may be with a different team. But a year later, the Cardinals, John Mozeliak won that trade by a landslide.
Yeah, I always kind of expected Joe Kelly to fall off because, I, you know, like you said, no put-away pitch. He just didn't strike out a lot of batters. I mean, obviously, everybody loved his attitude, loved his personality, and it was disappointing to see him go, but I wasn't surprised. I did think Alan Craig would be more than what he's done. Now, he is starting to hit a little bit in Pawtucket. He's 295 with 3 homers, 11 RBI down there, which can hopefully either get him back to the big leagues because Boston's not doing anything, or get him traded. It's almost too bad the Cardinals can't get Boston to eat some of that money, because a guy like Alan Craig sitting at first base for a while with a little bit of his bat back wouldn't be a bad thing.
It wouldn't be bad at all, no.
Yeah. I don't rule anything out with Mo.
I do not. Mo knows.
That's right. That would seem to be the case, and we will see how that all plans out. But, yeah, I did think Alan Craig would hit a little bit better than he has, and I'm not terribly surprised. You know, the American League, especially that American League East, a lot of big hitters, a lot of big hitters and a lot of small ballparks. And,
and you really thought with if he can get his health back, I mean, that left field wall, I mean, with the way that field does play to hitters, I thought that Alan Craig could find his swing again. And I thought I kind of liked it quietly. I liked that we sent them both off to the American League, so in case they became, you know, Marvel Avengers and they started tearing the league up, they wouldn't be in our league. And I liked that, like, getting John Lackey. And I also thought, maybe in the American League, I mean, Joe Kelly probably not so much, but maybe Alan Craig can find it. Maybe get some weaker pitching, maybe playing DH if his foot's not great. But I thought he could find his way, and I really hope they bring him up. Because right now they have a bad pitching staff, and they have a very pouting David Ortiz over there who's whining because he's not, you know, hitting as good as he should. And, you know, to go off subject, whenever I think of David Ortiz and he pouts after a strikeout or he gets mad, I think of Albert Pujols, who just tells the media, you know, I trust my swing, I'll be fine. But, you know, in Boston, you have a bunch of this, the team is just not playing well. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think if Alan Craig keeps hitting, I think why not bring him up? Why not play this guy? I mean, you're paying him. You know, you obviously not paying him what six, is he making $6 million or is he making $9 million this year in his contract?
I don't know.
I thought that contract kind of escalated a little bit as it went along. But yeah, I mean, if you're paying the guy that much money, my gosh, I mean, bring him up. I think he is making, it's a 5-year, $31 million. He's making 5.5.
Yeah.
So, and it escalates next year to 9 and then 11. And then there's a $13 million option for 2018. But yeah, I mean, the Red Sox aren't playing well. And it's not like they're completely out of it. I mean, you can't hurt yourself by bringing up Alan Gregg and getting him some bats, especially at DH or in left field or first base. I mean, you can't help, you know, it isn't going to hurt the Red Sox at all to give him a chance. But yeah, I mean, looking at John Lackey making a start tonight at Busch Stadium where he's, if we can just get John Lackey to think that he's in Busch Stadium every start, because he seems to be now they asked him this like last week after his start. He insists that he felt his best in New York, or he feels his best on the road. But he is an unreal pitcher at home. I mean, do we have any idea? I mean, his career splits they backed it up. But is there anything to suggest why he pitches so good at Busch Stadium?
I can't imagine what it is. Now, I mean, he has had a little bit of bad luck. We talked about it. He pitched in Colorado. He pitched in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pitched worse bad in some places. Those two games are going to skew the fact that he's got a 2.40 ERA on the road. And he did have one good game. I don't remember who it was. He had the complete game against somebody on the road. That was pretty well. You know, I don't know. I think it helps that Busch Stadium is a bit of a pitcher's ballpark, I'm sure. I'm trying to see if I can find his fly ball ratio, because if that's, you know, that can be the difference right there. And it may just be, you know, being able to have that routine, knowing, you know, you're coming from your house, your apartment, whatever, and you just get into that routine, and it's a little bit. And at John Lackey's age, and I say that being that he's younger than me, but at John Lackey's age, you know, it probably doesn't take, you don't have that sharp edge. You have to be perfect to some degree. And if you're off just a little bit, that can have some huge impacts. Sometimes you can get away with it. A lot of times you can't. That may be the difference. I don't know.
I mean, looking at his season, he's had a couple. He got roughed up in Washington in April. He had 5 earned runs and 5 2/3. And then he got really beaten up in Colorado. He shut down the Phillies this past start, and he pitched very well against Minnesota at home. I mean, when he goes deep into games, it always seems to happen at Busch. I mean, he had that one game against the Mets where he gave up 1 earned run, and I know he didn't want to come out of that game. He only threw 76 pitches against the Mets on May 18th, and I think that's the night that him and Matheny almost got into it, which I imagine happens every start. I mean, if he's got like around 80 pitches, he just gives him that Texas glare. And the thing, you know, they have a staring contest probably in the dugout. And I'm sure there's a referee, and it's Tony Cruz. But for the most part, this season, I mean, he's only gotten roughed up twice. He gave in his first and his start against Cincinnati on April 10th, he gave up 4. But, I mean, there's just a lot of games where he's just a steady 7-inning pitcher. And a lot of it happens at Busch. I mean, the Dodgers at Busch, the Milwaukee, Minnesota. He faces the Cubs tonight. He's faced the Cubs May 7th at Busch Stadium. He went 7 2/3, one earned run, 5 hits, 10 strikeouts. His season high was against the Cubs in May. So hopefully he can do it again tonight. He's a guy that just seems to really like pitching at Busch. When he's on the mound at Busch, I have all the confidence in the world. On the road, you don't know if he's going to back up home plate.
Yeah, I don't know. Of course, you really want him pitching at home during the day because he's 3-0 during the day and he doesn't give up anything. But and maybe that's it. Maybe he's just maybe it's more of a day thing than a road thing.
maybe it's
just pitch more at home in the daytime. I don't know. It's difficult to know. I mean, the varieties of baseball. I mean, small sample size and all that. But it's ever since he's come over, he has pitched better at home, which is again makes it comfortable. And it's a good thing. I mean, that means it does make it difficult. If you look way down the road at the postseason, because right now the Cardinals should have home field advantage.
Oh, yeah. They should have home field advantage.
Right. But do you want to pitch John Lackey game one or game two?
Because
if you don't, then he pitches on the road in game three or four. And, you know, second series depends on how the first series pans out. You may not have an option, but it's interesting. And, again, that's just something to put in the back of the head because it's not even an all-star break yet. So,
Definitely. I mean, and of course, if I'm just thinking about playoffs, I think a guy like, you know, you got Jaime who could pitch almost anywhere right now, and you have Waka who's also good in the road. Yeah, but if we're thinking about playoffs, I think Lackey, you have to make sure he pitches at Busch because he's a different pitcher, and his strikeouts to walks are just ridiculous at home. I mean, he's more efficient. He doesn't throw as many pitches. I mean, of course, you know, we all know what Lackey, and even he'll tell you, I mean, by now in his career, he is what he is. He isn't going to be a great home and away split. But I tell you what, every time I think about what he's doing, hey, $500,000. And of course, to us, that's like lottery money. But as far as what he used to make in his career, I mean, this is, like I said, that's just the kicker of that deal, is that you got John Lackey and you also got him for bare minimum. I mean, he's making less than Pete Cosma.
Well, he's got about as many hits, so it's okay. that's the amount that these guys donate to charity a lot of times.
That's right, exactly. So
that's the kind of thing. And the other thing is, you may not have to worry about it in the postseason because he may not be in the rotation. If you're only looking at four starters, there's a good chance John Lackey doesn't pitch. With Lynn, Walker, Garcia, and Martinez. Now, again, and you know, there's Adam Wainwright that says he's going to be back too.
Which you can never count out Wainwright. I mean, if he has a will, when there's a will in his brain, there's a way.
There he is. But I expect, even if Wainwright can make it back, I don't think he could get the arm strength up. He'd be a 1-2 inning guy that they put in the bullpen. But interesting. Anyway, that's, again, long way down. We don't have to go down that road just now. Cardinals are coming home. As they come home, we get to talk a little bit more about injuries, especially about guys that didn't go on the road trip that we start getting reports on. And the biggest one, of course, is Matt Holliday. Holliday is eligible to come off the DL, not ready to come off the DL, but it sounds like at least a pretty decent chance that we'll see him before the All-Star break. It's not no guarantee. There's really no timetable, but it sounds like he's improving enough that we might see him play beforehand. And obviously the bats are working as they run into some mediocre pitching. But having Matt Holliday back in the lineup is a very good thing.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Holliday, I've said it before, other people have. He's kind of the heart and soul of this lineup. A lineup that's not really, doesn't generate much power, just kind of an on-base percentage machine. It's kind of a moving parts kind of, the way it works is, you know, I mean, when he's in the three hole, you know, Peralta moves back down to four. If Jason Hayward keeps hitting the way he's hitting, he's in a middle lineup presence. It's just, he kind of completes the whole thing. I think that it kind of fell apart when he left on June 8th in Colorado. And I think we were all just kind of breathing a sigh of relief when it was only a grade 2 strain. And I think with him, I think it's whenever he can run full speed, I think it's, if he's getting into baseball activities, which was STLA.com reported yesterday, that means he's got to be close or at least jogging, or he's got to at least be running. Because when he starts to run, I mean, we all know that the upper body is basically comparable to Thor. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to just being healthy, it's just his legs. I mean, and we all know that in the last couple of years, he's told the Cardinals constantly that he feels the best because his legs are healthy. And so whenever I think it'd be great to get him back before the All-Star break. I've always thought realistically after the All-Star break, but if he makes I told you this last week, as far as him coming back is one thing, as far as him being an effective hitter and player, it might take about a week to knock off the rust. So even to get him back before the All-Star break, even before the deadline, would just be great, because the way this offense works it works its best with Matt Holliday in that three spot.
Yeah, we're looking at, you know, 2+ weeks now to the All-Star break. It might not be. It may be him coming back right after. But it would be nice to see him get, that Pittsburgh series right before they're in Pittsburgh. That may be the other downside, is the Cardinals go to Chicago for four and to Pittsburgh for four right before the All-Star break, which
Huge
is a big
games.
Series. But they may not want to send Holliday on that road trip, as well. So we'll have to see. But yeah, those 8 games are going to be.
Yeah.
They could put the division out of reach.
It could, and really just because of Holliday, how well he hits the Cubs. I know he hits very well in Wrigley. So I mean, if there's any chance that he can get back, even for that last game on the 8th against the Cubs, and yeah, like you said, those four. I mean, I said it last week. Those 8 games. I mean, if we maintain this 7-8 game lead and we go out there and knock these guys around, and they're more than 10 games out, I mean, you know, because then after the All-Star break, you're going to be tearing into August here soon. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be running down the stretch. And I know somebody noted yesterday that the second half of the Cardinals schedule, it's the cumulative record of all the teams, it's below 500. The Cardinals record, as far as their opposition is concerned, it kind of drops in the second half of the season. So as long as the Cardinals just don't, you know, lose control of this ship and they don't, have a terrible record on that last road trip. I mean, the first half of the season could really finish up well. And I think I'm with you. If we can get Matt Holliday back, even for a couple of those Pirate games, that'd be great.
Yeah, and you know, we've been on the other side. We know that leads are not necessarily secure. I mean, after cutting off, 10 games in the wild card in 2011, I don't think any of us are going to feel real confident. I mean, levels of confidence, but not 100% confident on a series title or a division title until they clinch it. But if you can go into the All-Star, even if you just split those games with the Cubs and the Pirates, and you keep them 8-9 games back at the All-Star break, you know, that's a good chunk of their chances to, you know, head-to-head that they will have wasted. So, I mean, those are going to be big games. And of course, you got to get there. There's still some games here between there. We got to play the Cubs, like you said. We got a series with the White Sox and then a series with the Padres. That's all those are at home, which is great because the Cardinals have been outstanding at home.
Yeah.
You know, so in theory, they don't lose any ground to the Cubs and the Pirates playing those guys in Busch. So you're looking at 8 or 9 games when you start that stretch. It's going to be interesting, and I really like to see where the Cardinals are going to be sitting at when it comes to the All-Star break. But again, we got a couple weeks to get there. Now, not only is Matt Holliday recovering, Jordan Walton, who you may have forgotten that was actually on this team, being that he only pitched for a month, but he pitched well for that month. I mean, he's talking about coming back to the All-Star break. I got to say, I'm still a little hesitant about this. I mean, this is one of those things where it was, you know, rest and rehab versus surgery. And so often that doesn't work out very well. But, you know, hopefully this one will. It's putting him into back in that eighth inning spot eventually. And I don't know if he'll go straight back there or if he'd have to work his way back there getting the rust off and stuff. But having him back in that, I mean, like I said, the bullpen doesn't give up any runs now.
No.
To have him added to it just makes it even better.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it makes the back end of the game stronger. I know Kevin Seacrest has gotten a chance to close. He's gotten a chance to be an eighth inning guy. But I think of, in a perfect world, you have Seacrest in the seventh, you have Walton in the eighth, and Rosenthal in the ninth. And that just makes a Cardinal rotation that's churning out 6 innings like it's nobody's business right now. That makes other teams, I mean, it puts them in a rut. I mean, so if Walton can come back, I mean, I think of Walton and Holliday as around the same thing, but you're right. With Walden, they kind of try to dodge a bullet, and that bullet may come back and hit him anyway when it comes to his injury. So you just hope they don't rush him back, because like you said, the bullpen's really good right now. So there's no need to rush him back. There's no need to rush a fragile injury that, you know, that's similar to me, like, you know, to Waka's injury last year, where you know, and even with speaking of Wainwright, you know, an Achilles where he's going to try to come back probably faster than he should. But, you know, with these guys, you just got to keep them on their rehab, make sure they're ready to go. Because unless it's an area of need, you don't need to push Jordan Walden. If you can get him back for August, September at full blast, and then the back end of your bullpen is just shut down. Because the way Rosenthal is pitching this year, where he's walking less, he might give up a hit or so, but he's just not giving the opposition anything. And if we get the Walden we got in April, which was pretty good, I mean, as far as being efficient, you know, I mean, 12 strikeouts, I mean, I think he walked, what, 4? He throws hard. He's got the most unusual delivery, as we all know. But he's a guy you can rely on. He's a guy that's got closing experience. He's got late-game experience. So getting him back is great. I'm with you. I just hope they don't rush him, because there's no reason to.
Yeah. It's there is no reason to rush, and again, we need to. I figure even if Walden's ready to come back for the All-Star break, he's going to spend some time in Memphis to get the, you know, to get a little bit stronger and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll
definitely.
We probably will have a little bit of time to say, you know, Seacrest. Of course, you know, if you have Seacrest and Walden, you say seventh, eighth, ninth, which I agree with somewhat. But with the way the starters are going into the seventh so often, it may be one of those things where you can always have that, you know, big gun to go in the eighth, whether it's Seacrest or it's Walden.
Oh, yeah.
And Seth Maness has done a good, fine job in that, too.
Great job.
You like to have Maness, I think, a little more flexible to come in some high-leverage situations, been outstanding.
A fun story about, you know, Seth Maness, that when I covered the Cardinals at the winter warm-up, and I actually got Maness in a room, and I was about ready to ask him the magic question. I was like, okay, now all these guys throw, like, heat, you know, propane down there, and all you do is come in and throw one pitch, and I asked him, you know, do the other guys get kind of jealous? Because you can go in there and spin one little sinker and get two outs, and they got to throw like, you know, like 25 fastballs to get, you know, two or three outs. And I tell you what, and Kevin Reynolds will tell you guys that I wouldn't shut up, because he's about ready to tell me the secret of what he does, and I messed it up by talking too much. Seth Maness was about ready to unfold the mysteries of his relief universe, of how he can just churn two outs, even though the hitters know it's coming. Even then they know, okay, this guy's got pretty much a sinker. He gets those two outs, and I kept talking, and he had to go in the media room. It's one of the biggest flaps of my early blogger career, was not letting Seth Maness tell me the secret. It's like getting a recipe from a cook. And I just kept talking because I was a rookie.
Yep. That's the rookie mistake, trying to make the question longer than the answer. So, yeah, I understand. I would have been okay. So. But yeah, it's fascinating, and it's really kind of weird. And I look at this, you know, we have given Randy Choate a hard time at times, but he's really come on like he did last year. You know, had a rough first month. He kind of settled in the rest of the way. You look at Seacrest's splits. And the fact that he actually lefties hit him pretty well.
Yeah, they do.
Having Choate still out there as that lefty specialist, and then freeing Seacrest up to be that eighth inning guy has been a pretty big deal for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that were, it just, I mean, it's like you say, it's the way the bullpen works. I mean, guys like Seth Maness don't get the credit they deserve. I mean, if he has one bad stint, I mean, the whole Cardinal universe wants to throw him off the trash, and then until the next time he churns out a double play ball in a time of need, he's basically kind of become the fireman. I mean, he's a guy that comes in with guys on base, and he's able to get those outs, and he's able to do whatever Mike Matheny needs him to do. And it's just one of those things, and also, like you said, it frees up guys like Seacrest to be more of to fill a different role. And I was as surprised as you to see how, like you said, how Seacrest is against lefties, how they hit him. Because I always thought that he was a guy that can get guys from both sides of the plate out, but he can't. So, I mean, it's like, you know, a guy like Seth Maness just allows you to, you know, to juggle your bullpen a little better. I feel like this is one of the things that Mike Matheny has not blown up this year and has improved on quietly a lot has been the bullpen. I mean, all of his arms are being used just right. I mean, he's making some good moves. You know, when Rosenthal had his problem, he just moved Seacrest into the ninth, and it worked. I think the bullpen has been one of Mike Matheny's kind of bright spots this year.
Yeah, I will say, I think that Matheny has used the bullpen better, whether that's because, and I don't think it's even that. I was going to say whether it's because just everybody's doing well, but I think Matheny's made the right choices a lot of times, too. I think there's a lot less of, why are you going to this guy? Why aren't you, you know, mixing up? Because it used to be Matheny would go to the same three guys, whether the situation was five or six runs or if it was a one-run game. And I think Matheny's doing a better job of that. I think Matheny, on the whole, has done a little bit better job this season, except for the fact that, as we talked about a little bit on Twitter yesterday, it seems like, that John Mozeliak, for the third year in a row, may have to make a trade to get rid of a player. Just so Mike Matheny won't use him. You know, Mitchell Boggs, he used Mitchell Boggs up until the day that Mike Matheny traded him.
Yes.
Alan Craig was out there and out there and out there until Mozeliak traded him. And now we saw John Jay play all three games in Miami. And maybe some of that was, hey, John Jay's a Miami graduate, you know.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and I, again, Matheny was brought in as a leader of men. And he, I don't think it's unsurprising that he would probably take into account various factors like that. And you can say whether he should or not, if he should take in those quantitative or qualitative ideas, such as playing in front of a home team, home crowd, or something like that. Whatever the situation, it's working. And we saw that last night with Pete Cosma. Pete Cosma comes in, and everybody's like, oh, why are we playing Cosma instead of Garcia? I mean, sure, Peralta needs a day off, fine, but why not Garcia? Because Peralta has all of three hits on the season. And then Peralta goes, Cosma has three hits, and Cosma goes out and he gets three hits and a walk. He drives in runs, scores a run from second. I mean, it played like the best game Cosma's played since that stretch in 2012, which is why he's still around the team.
Yeah.
I have said in the past that Mike Matheny lives a charmed life, but I think to some degree, maybe sometimes we have to give an indication that maybe Matheny knows a little bit more than we do.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to John Jay, I mean, I see people's understanding there because he got a guy in Peter Borges who I think's better defensively, and you know, and Peter Borges, I think did he play last night at all?
I don't believe
that he hasn't.
So.
That he hasn't played since Saturday. I mean, he hasn't had a start. I don't think he's had an at bat. I mean, and that can't happen. I mean, because John Jay, if you look at his numbers. The last seven games, he's hitting .227. The last 15, it's .200. The last 30, it's .183. It's not getting better. I mean, he's hitting about .226. Now, we all know that, you know, he had the wrist, and I think he came back too fast to the Cardinals. I think he needed a rehab stint. He's not getting better. Now, I don't know if you send him on a rehab or if you just make him more of a fourth or fifth guy because, I mean, if you can't have Holiday out there right now, I've always said this since he went down, you have to have your best defensive outfield, and I think that's Grichuk, Borges, and Hayward. And, I mean, we all know, I mean, I'm a John Jay fan. I mean, I've always been a Jay guy. I think he's undervalued. I think he's kind of like disliked just because of how often Matheny has played him in the past. But right now, he's playing him, like, not for good reasons. I mean, he's playing him, I think, just because he trusts him and you hope that he's going to get better. I mean, when it comes to Cosma, it was a great game last night. I mean, I think Peralta needed a rest, and I think Matheny likes his defense. But when it comes to Jay, people can make the argument for what he's doing in the outfield this year, but, I mean, all around, I mean, Borges is the better outfielder. And to have him not have any action since Saturday, that's just kind of alarming. So, and I have said since the beginning of the year, I don't think John Jay and Peter Borges both finished the year on the Cardinals.
And I was wrong. He did actually pinch hit last night. He struck out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
okay.
He had one pinch hit, but still, I don't think
one,
that changes
one at bat.
Yeah, I don't think that changes the point anything at all. He pinch hit in the eighth inning, so I mean, it was, you know, easily could have been the same thing. I haven't looked at it, and I don't remember exactly when John Jay returned. Maybe I can do that real quick, but you know, Borges seems to have slipped significantly since then. I mean, I'm looking, you know, just based on batting average, which again is not necessarily where you want to use your main judgment call, but it's quick and dirty. On May 27th, he's hitting .272, and that's got to be getting around where Jay returned.
May 29th.
Yeah, see, and now he's hitting .241, and I don't know that he got enough regular play. Maybe he's pressing a little bit because of Jay being there, figuring he needs to do something when he does get out there. I mean, and we got to factor in. I mean, he played three games in a row against the Twins. Of course, you know, we had the DH for two of those, but
yes.
He did get a chance to play against the Twins. So, and he got hit. I mean, he had two doubles. He had a double. He went 1-for-2, 1-for-3, and then he went 0-for-3. So the argument has always been since for last year and this year that Peter Borges with regular expected at bats will do well. Again, he doesn't do well enough in those limited times to really argue that he should get those expanded times. It's kind of a take it on faith type of thing.
Yeah.
But again, I think you're right. I think he ought to be out there more because, as I said, John Jay's not doing anything. Now, I will say, and we have not seen the lineup for today. It's about 11 o'clock now, and I haven't seen it. It may be out soon. But I would almost bet that Peter Borges will be in the lineup today.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, what I'm asking for, I mean, I don't expect Mike Matheny to ever, like, just banish John Jay. It's just not going to happen. I mean, what I want, I mean, it'd just be nice to see them both get a couple, two or three starts a week, you know, have them split up, have them push each other, because if you have Peter Borges starting a couple of days and then John Jay, these guys are going to know what's going on. These guys are going to know that they have to fight for these at-bats, because Randall Grichuk is obviously a part of the future. The team loves him. He's actually maintained a .280 average. You know, his bat hasn't just amounted to all strikeouts and home runs. He's actually finding ways to get on base. He actually drew a walk the other day, which I was really proud of Randall for doing that. But, you know, when it comes to this Borges and Jay, it's always going to be that fight for who, you know, who gives you the overall plus. But I think you're right. I think Borges, I mean, he has to play. He has to feel comfortable. I mean, whenever I see him in interviews, I see like a guy who's just looking over his shoulder. A guy who's just really going, okay, am I going to start tomorrow? Am I ever going to start? Am I going to start this week? And, you know, and the guy, I mean, he's most comfortable when John Jay was gone. I mean, when it was just him and Randall and they are fighting for at-bats. But now I think Borges, he sees he has to fight Grichuk and John Jay. And whenever Matt Holiday comes back, what's going to happen then? I mean, the DH, as far as I know today, it doesn't exist in the National League. So, I mean, you have, you're going to have a lot of outfielders on that bench. And I mean, is Peter Borders ever going to play if when Matt Holliday comes back?
You know, it's interesting, but I just kind of looked at the game log here, and Borges has started 6 games since Holliday went down. Well, that's only been about 13 games. He's really actually starting a little bit more often than I think we feel like he is. Because I'm looking at this, you know, game 59 for the Cardinals. He started in Colorado. I think that's the day after Holliday's. Probably.
He has.
And so it's interesting because we do see, I mean, you look at that, like you said, you've got the 4 games there where he doesn't play at all. But he does get some of his starts. And I don't know if we're not focusing on that or it just seems like they're so sporadic that it's difficult to expect anybody to get into a groove. But, like I said, I think he'll start today, not knowing the handedness of the pitchers or anything like that, but just for the fact that he hasn't played in a while.
I think Jake Arrieta is pitching tonight for the Cubs, so it could be. Well, hopefully it's Borges. I mean, I think he's earned a start against the Cubs this weekend.
Yeah, I think that we'll see that. So, and again, one of these guys may just have to, you know, take the bull by the horns. And again, like you said, when Holliday comes back, neither one of them may be getting a whole lot of play because
the way
Grichuk has been going. It's going to be difficult to sit him on a regular basis, I would think. And he can play center field. We've seen that. So, you know, when you can put Holliday, Grichuk, and Hayward out there, especially a Hayward that is hitting lights out like he is now, I mean, that's a pretty potent offensive hit. You know, if Grichuk starts going through the spell where he swings at everything and strikes out all the time, which is pretty much his standard operating procedure.
His MO,
I mean, he when he hits it, it's very, very good, but it's not always going to hit it.
Yeah, I mean, he's picked it up. I think he was kind of drifting a little bit in the middle of June. I know I wrote an article kind of focusing on the loss of Holliday to the Cardinals offense, and I noted how even Hayward at one time was hitting kind of weakly in June. But then in the last 7 games, Grichuk's picked it up. He's hitting .333. He's got, you know, 3 home runs. He's got 9 hits and 27 at bats. So yeah, he's going to play. It's because I think of what he represents to the team going forward. And, you know, the way that he can spark, you know, I mean, he can have one of those 2-game sets like he had in New York where he can just, you know, go out of his mind and hit home runs and doubles and triples and just, you know, hit everything hard. So I think the team is really high on him. I think he kind of gives, you know, them the kind of the replacement that they're looking for in Holliday, you know, with the big bat, the ability, and the better glove in the outfield. And I think he is the center fielder of the future. He doesn't have it locked down yet, but I think as far as what this club thinks of him going forward, he is kind of that guy. So I think when Holliday comes back, I think you're going to see, you might see that as we've all kind of thought about, you might see a trade of either Borges leaving or Jay, because I think it's just, I mean, I think it's going to have to happen to free up time and I don't know, maybe give John Mozeliak some peace of mind when it comes to Matheny making the lineups.
Maybe. The problem is that I don't know who the obvious pull-up from Memphis is if somebody gets hurt. Because, you know, it's one thing to have 4 outfielders, but, you know, as soon as you trade off your 5th one, you need one. So there is some hesitation.
Maybe Tommy Pham, maybe. I don't know.
And that's true. That's true. Tommy Pham very well could be that guy.
And he's healthy. And he's healthy.
Right at the moment, at least.
At the moment, at least, yeah.
Like Jaime Garcia is healthy at the moment.
It's a relative thing.
Yeah. Pulling up, the Cardinals over the last 6 games have hit .305 with 10 home runs and 38 RBI. It's obviously they're playing to Philadelphia and Miami. This is not going to continue. However, the weather's warming up. Jason Hayward is warming up. He's been hitting against a lot of people. Is this a little bit, I mean, again, I don't expect him to hit .305 over the next, you know, 2 weeks. But do you think that the things are coming around, or are we going to wind up, you know, getting in another cold spell when we hit a little bit better pitching?
I think, I mean, well, just the way the Cardinals as a team overall, they play against the better teams. I mean, just the way that we scored runs against, we scratched out runs against LA. We scored against the Royals. I mean, these good teams with good pitching. I mean, I think the more these guys play and how good they play at home, I think the Cardinals just got through a grueling kind of road stretch where they played a lot of road games. They're coming home. They're playing a lot of games at home in the next 30 days. I think almost a fair majority of July. is playing, especially you finish July from the 17th to the 31st, almost except for two games against the White Sox. You're at Busch Stadium where the Cardinals are pretty much one of the best teams in the league at home. I think this is going to sustain. I think as you say, when Matt Holliday comes back, I think the offense gets a lot better just with his spot in the lineup. I think he makes the other guys better. I think the Cardinals have kind of gotten through a rough patch. They didn't have, you know, they lost Adams, they lost Holliday. I think they're going to start getting healthier. They have guys like Hayward who do get better as the season goes along. You have a guy like Holliday who, however how good he's been in the first 3 months of the season, he's a guy that heats up power-wise in August and September. So I think this team can keep hitting. I mean, as far as just annihilating teams, no. But I think as far as giving their starters, you know, 4 to 5 runs and scoring some runs, I mean, getting runs. I mean, I know against the Cubs, you know, anything could happen. But I mean, they're facing the White Sox after that. They're facing the Padres in St. Louis. I mean, it could be a time for our team to really kind of build on that lead over the Pirates and the Cubs before we face them in that last week before the All-Star break. So I think the bats are going to keep moving. I think they're kind of starting to gather steam. They faced a couple weak teams to kind of gear up for this homestand. And I think with the return of guys like Holliday and maybe, you know, Johnny Peralta starts picking up that boomstick again and Grichuk keeps it up. And as long as Matheny doesn't overuse guys like John Jay who are not hitting and he keeps mixing it up and he uses the bench, I think the offense can sustain it, if not even hit a little more.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, they've proven they can win 2-1 games, and so that's okay. Yeah. But yeah, I'd much rather win a few 5-2 games instead.
Yeah.
And be a little less nerve-wracking. Cardinals, again, winning 2 out of every 3, 48 and 24 right now. If they go 500 the rest of the way, that's 93 wins. So it's pretty impressive all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the Cardinals have gotten off to this great start. We all know it's far from over, but when you do get out to this kind of start that we haven't seen, at least in the last few years, I mean, when you get out to this kind of start, you do give yourself a chance to kind of just, you know, maintain what you're doing. And as we all, as I noted, their record, I mean, as far as the record of their teams are facing the rest of the year, it does go down. I mean, they've already faced the Dodgers. I mean, they've gotten that off the docket. They faced, you know, I think that dreaded West Coast trip, I mean, it isn't going to be as bad as it has been in recent years. And I think that they have a fair majority of their games over 50% at home the rest of the year. And that's where they play really well. No matter who steps on that field against the Cardinals at Busch Stadium, the Cardinals are always going to have a good chance of winning. And as long as they've gotten through that big, like I said, I think June was a big month where we had a lot of games on the road. I mean, if I look at June, I mean, they're pretty much on the road since, is that almost like the beginning of the month? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they've been home since, I'm looking at,
cause they were home, they had that, series.
The Twins, yeah, the Twins, the Royals and the Twins.
Twins, yeah.
So. Yeah, but as far as just really getting that sustained home streak, I mean, it's just, I think the Cardinals have gotten through that rough patch on the road, and hopefully with the way they play at home, and I mean, we all know their bats, they're not gonna like light anything up. I mean, they're not gonna score 9 and 10 runs every night, but as long as they can give this pitching staff something to work with, the way the pitching, the starters and the bullpen are throwing right now, they don't need a lot. As long as you give them 4 or 5 runs, that seems to take care of business. But, you know, yeah, you do have the Cubs are in town. This is the big 3 games. You have the White Sox who are, you know, you may not think much of them, but, you know, that they can score. And the Padres, and like you, I'm looking at that 8-game stretch against the Cubs and the Pirates before the All-Star break, and that's a big section because, as we noted earlier in the show, if we can – snap them around, or even like you said, come out even, or maybe take 3 out of 4 again, one of those series. I mean, you push one team very far down. So when it comes to the Cardinals, they just have to keep doing what they're doing, sustain this start that they've had, because they're off to one of their best starts in franchise history. And that gives you the chance just to maintain what you're doing without having to make a big push. Because we all know that we don't want to be in the Pirates' position of having to push back 8 games as you're getting into July. So the Cardinals are in a very, very good spot.
Yeah, I think this is the best start since 43 or 44, and that's
oh, wow.
I mean, that's war years, and the Cardinals had Mutual And as talked about on Twitter, they had a good farm system to be able to bring people up that maybe not everybody is. So they were playing that they were playing kind of like a step ahead of everybody then anyway, just because of quality. So to see what this team is doing on a more level playing field, in fact, less than level, if you will, with losing Holiday and Wainwright and all the others, it's really remarkable. If the season ended today, the Cubs and the Pirates, they'd be playing at each other in the wild card game, and we're up 8.5 on both of them. So it's a pretty impressive thing. Let's wrap this up. Dan, you want to say anything that's been going on at St. Louis Sports Minute this week?
Oh, I welcome a couple of writers. I got Josie Curtis. She's written a couple of good recaps and look forwards. And I got Daniel Winnett wrote an article today called "Is John Jay the Most Polarizing Cardinal?" And he actually makes a comparison. I'm not going to spoil, but he makes a comparison to a past Cardinal. Maybe he talks about why Cardinal fans don't like John Jay and why Matheny uses him so much. So, I'm welcoming a lot of young. I'm trying to be really pull a lot of young writers and really fans, because the idea of STL Sportsman, it was really to make it the voice of the fan. I mean, if you're a fan on Twitter and you want to expand on the thought, I mean, you can come write for me and I'll, it's pretty much a site where we just have a little fun with, and we give a voice to people who want to vent. I think I had somebody on my site the other day just write an open letter to the Blues GM complaining about why the Blues haven't been good in the playoffs. It was an open letter. And so, we do those kind of things over there. It's kind of off the cuff. I'm writing for KSDK Sports myself, but I'm kind of gathering some young writers at STL Sportsman. So come check us out there. We have a lot of different voices over there right now.
Yeah. And, C70, we didn't do much more than our normal over there. So except for the post about podcasts this week, which is interesting. If you want to listen to some other podcasts, check that post out, because there's a number of good Cardinal podcasts out there.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we'll do it. That'll do it for this week. Dan and I will be back at you next week, hopefully talking about another successful run against some Chicago teams. So until then, have a good one. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is Best Dan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.